This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by United legend Paul Parker to talk over the preview of the game against Bayern at the weekend and also the first game against Bayern Munich in the Champions League as well. If you're watching live on YouTube or Facebook, feel free to get your comments and questions in. If you're watching the replay, feel free to say hello and comment. We do reply to the comments we get. If you're listening back on the audio podcast, be sure to like and subscribe on the platform you're listening on and leave us a review as well on the platform you're listening on. Also joined by, he looks like he's in official capacity today. David Murphy representing the club, not quite. How are you doing, mate? You all right?
I am doing perfectly fine today. I'm going to have a word with my wardrobe associate to make sure that next week I'll have maybe a SpongeBob t-shirt on or something.
Yeah, all right. That's what you want to do. And also joined, obviously, by Paul Parker, United legend. How are you doing, Paul? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Wine? Go on.
You going to get a SpongeBob t-shirt for next week?
Nope, yellow's never really suited me, to be perfectly honest. Yellow and red, it's not a good mixture, is it, really? So Dave's got to really work on the fact of he might have a problem with his eyes with colour. Hopefully he does stop at red lights.
Yeah, they're just suggestions.
He's a terrible driver, I can tell you that. Always driving on the wrong side of the road for some reason. And he moved back home. He's still doing it. All right. So obviously, we're going to be talking about United's games against Bayern and Brighton in the forthcoming 10 days or so. But we're going to start talking about the problems at the club and how they might impact United's approach going forward with Erik ten Hag. Obviously, there's a bit of an injury crisis in the defence and in the midfield as well. There are other incidents, as we know, with Antony, and I'm thinking that maybe the formation might be impacted, but you know, as we've seen so far with Ten Hag, he has really favoured that 4-3-3, and he's really gone down the road of square pegs in round holes to make that 4-3-3 work, and now we're approaching a time where he might not be able to do that because of the skill sets of certain players, and I'm thinking specifically of obviously this absence of right-handed players that, you know, Sancho might come in there, but he has tended to play Bruno out there. And also there's the idea of where he's going to have to play Mason Mount when he comes back. Paul, obviously throughout the majority of last season, he played this 4-3-3 system and it's worked. I mean, the familiarity of it worked. He won us a trophy. There was definite tracked improvement. You would think with great managers, there's some tactical flexibility there. What we wanted to see is what we did see. We saw a team that looked like a team, a unit that looked like a unit. It looked like it had a shape rather than the last sort of 5 or 6 years before. We weren't always sure what we were going to get. At least we did get that. But now with the injuries and the other issues that we've got, you might think that we're going to have, it might become necessary to change it up a little bit. Is there anything in there from the players that you've got in that front sort of area? So obviously the back four will stay the back four. You won't imagine that they'll move to a back three. Is there anything that you would imagine that he's going to be able to do with the players that he's got to? I mean, you would think it's going to be a narrower shape if he does move. Is there anything in those skill sets that you think might be an effective formation for United?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think Reguilón's got to come in at left back. There's been enough time. I think you have to get a bit of balance on that left side. If you're going to have Marcus Rashford out there, I think you need a left foot. You can't play two right footed players. Not unless Dennis is going to come out of retirement, to be perfectly honest. So that's one of the things you look at to get balance. It's a word that's used by a lot of people, but I think it's especially on the left hand side makes such a difference to get in wider areas. Somebody who can actually go round, overlap, as we say, and maybe deliver with the left foot, crossing in from behind people as often as possible. But if you look at it as a front three, you'd look at Højlund starting. For me, to play in the same way, I think there's the person, he has to give a young player the opportunity to start a game of football and give him a run now. I think we have talked about this, I'm sure, about Anthony and about saying the way he has been playing. But I think the young lad, Pelistri, thank you. I think he needs a start. I think he's earned the right. Every time he comes on, he causes problems. He's got a never say die attitude. When he does get around behind people, he crosses the ball. You know, an early cross, doesn't matter how it comes in, is definitely better than a late great cross, because by then, sometimes, people have given up making the runs and they're static. But you just know, and especially now, there's a natural centre forward there, he's going to make runs if he believes that someone's going to cross the ball early or someone's on seen an opportunity to cross it. Even, you know, they're on their strongest foot. He can use his left foot and he will use it. While the other fella, Anthony, won't use his right foot. So I think that's the way for him to go if he wants to play that system. His biggest job in coming up the weekend is who is he going to play in that midfield? He's made a signing, which everybody wants to see and everyone is believing him because he should have been there at the start of pre-season, but it's Manchester United. So what you want, you know, you virtually go out shopping and you go there with your bags and you come back disappointed because all you've done is window shop. And every manager's done that. When they've had a decent, even Mourinho, he won the Europa League. And you're thinking, like every fan, you suddenly think, can't wait for the start of the season because of this. Everything's going to start right. And bang, it hits. You just hit the railings because you can't do anymore because of the way things work out, the way you can and can't buy players as a Manchester United player. So it stopped it. And he's had exactly the same Ten Hag. He's found it, which I thought myself, this ain't going to happen this time. It's going to be, this is decent. Finish the season, yes, with a trophy, an FA Cup final. But you could just see that the bits were missing and you thought, he's going to get this sorted from what he'd done before in his last window. And all of a sudden, someone's just gone bang, put the ratings down, stopped him doing what he wanted to do. He ends up getting a player, which I believe, and I think everyone believes he wanted. The problem is, now he's got that player on loan rather than him being his own player. He's got him on loan, which I don't know how that works out, but if they do take him on, could it come that he'd be more expensive after being a loan and then becoming a Manchester United player? But he has to start with him. And as I mentioned, Reguilón, because I think it gives the fans a lift. We're playing against Brighton. It was embarrassing last season. That ain't being disrespectful to Brighton, because Brighton are a good side. So I think that he needs to give the fans a lift, and you start with Amrabat and you start with Reguilón, so people can see that it's something a little bit forward thinking. It needs freshening up. Mason Mount is going to be fit. What's he going to do there? There's a lot of questions. And what's he going to do this midfield? All of a sudden now, because things ain't going right for Casemiro and Eriksen, the legs have gone, which is an incredible statement, which football fans keep saying when things ain't going right for a player, one is, oh, he's tired, or, oh, his legs are gone. He's left it all at Real Madrid. We saw that. We knew that was going to happen. He was too expensive. Eriksen, oh, we had that. Shouldn't have got him because of this, because of that. But maybe it's the fact of the players around them are not helping them to the point of showing their strengths in the game. And both of those players, Casemiro and Eriksen, rely on a team that are brave enough to take the ball on and then they'll be even braver and keep the ball and do things with it. And until such time he gets the right personnel on that pitch, it isn't going to happen. And that's why I think the lad on the right will add energy, a desire to go past people on the outside. He definitely 100% will track back with more purpose than Anthony, because he will be more disciplined in the way he does it. Playing in front of Aaron Wan-Bissaka will be a plus as well. Two workaholics on that side. You're not going to get any artistry or anything like that as such. It just both of them work, but honest players. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. But Amrabat in that midfield. And then what is going to be the best way to play that midfield? You're going to have Casemiro and you're going to have Fernandes. But for me, I still like the idea of Eriksen. But how are you going to play that system and get Eriksen and get the best out of him now in the current climate? And Fernandes, you just put your arms up and you just hope that everything starts well for him. And then you know you've got a player. And that's how it is with him, to be perfectly honest. And that's what makes him what he is. You can't be any way now. He's of that age. You're not going to change him. So I don't know how the manager's going to go about that.
So if I'm reading what you've sort of put forward, right? So you'd have Casemiro, Bruno, because Bruno's obviously going to start because he's the captain, Amrabat. So that's midfield, Palestre, Hoyland and Rashford.
Even I though think
you, so. you want to find a place for Eriksen, but would be how you'd start.
That's how I would start. That's how I would start against. That definitely gives you. You've got two players with good energy in Fernandes and Amrabat, but then you've got Amrabat and Casemiro, who you can trust in a certain way that are going to try and do the right things with the football. Like I said, with Bruno, it's kind of you're there, you're juggling, you don't know what you're going to get. But you know that if you can get the team playing right, Bruno Fernandes comes into his own. It's only when United are disjointed and getting outplayed, then there's a problem comes with him, because he then starts getting frustrated when things don't go right for him. Then he gets frustrated with other players and he shows his frustration, as we all know. And if he doesn't start right and get right early against Brighton, I believe the fans, and I think you know it, Wayne, will get very tetchy, because Brighton have been there the last couple of times. I think there's one of them where Lewis Dunk got sent off and they were totally outplaying Manchester United then when he got sent off. And United got away with that one. And then last season, it all come out and it just showed out, we knew how good they were. But I think you have to get that bit sorted out and get the fans on your side. It needs really, first of all, getting the right players on the pitch. And then it's about getting hold of it and being better in possession. Never going to outpass Brighton. I don't mean that. It's not going to happen at this moment in time. But what you need is to make sure when you do get the ball, is that you're doing something positive. The centre forward would be a massive positive, and I forgot him. That's the third positive. Reguilón, Hoyland, and Amrabat. We'll just lift the fans initially. They'll get behind it, but then it's up to the players to start in the right fashion. Is the best foot forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good comments coming in here. Chris says, morning, Chris. Hope you're doing well. He says he's going to the game on Saturday with the Anthony thing. If Greenwood wasn't bad enough, we can't keep having this. It could affect the players too. We're going to talk about Anthony today because it's an ongoing process. What I will say is that obviously the news this weekend has been that he's on a leave of absence, and he's actually spoken on social media so that he's staying in Brazil to remove controversy and stuff like that, to sort of keep the limelight off his off the players and to keep the attention on himself, which I think is a decent thing. We'll see how that transpires. And Johnny says, agree with Mr. Parker, giving you a formal address there. And seeing Reguilón and Amrabat would show a positive look. It's a funny thing because it's about the 1 year anniversary of Casemiro's debut, or his first start, I think, against Real Sociedad. I commented, Facebook is the land of your private thoughts or semi-public thoughts, the ones that you post on Twitter and Instagram about games. You go, you can complain and grumble a bit more on Facebook. Well, the anniversary came up, and I had said something along the lines of Casemiro looked to be a leggy against Sociedad, but that was because we were playing Fred as a false 10. Which, is its own problem. But the point was that Casemiro wasn't in his sort of normal role. He was going to do too many things. And I think perhaps United or the United players have got so comfortable with how good he is that they are not helping him out as much as they can. Because, obviously, when he grew into his form last season. The players won the Player of the Season awards, but Casemiro was the biggest difference in the team alongside Martinez in the way that they impacted United's capability to play and control a game of football that they always did, but their capability to, was massively improved. So, yeah, I still say I'm not in the his legs are gone camp. I think there's plenty more from Casemiro. Dave, from Paul's theory there, he's inclined to stay with that 4-3-3 that that Ten Hag has deployed, and the, you know, the players that he's listed there seem like a sensible option to start with against Brighton, a team who are going to have loads of energy. We'll preview the Brighton game more properly in a minute. But in terms of the formation that United are going to use over this sort of like next month or so before the next international break, do you think that Ten Hag will persist with what he's got and not be tempted to change it up? I mean, you talked about the players there from what Paul was saying as a starting 11, you don't have Eriksen and Mount in, and that's where I was thinking maybe you go with a narrower shape to put those guys in. But yeah, Hoyland's got to play because he played so well against Arsenal in the cameo, and Rashford's bound to play. So there's going to, you know, it's about Palestri and what you do with the midfield then. What would you be inclined to do? Or what do you think Ten Hag's inclined to do?
I mean, if we want to go into this game in a positive mode and have a chance of, and it's kind of, you know, it's bizarre that we're saying this, but then Brighton beat us at home last season, and then we went 2-0 down to Forest in our last home game. But if we want to start on the front foot, I think that 6-3-3 is what I would go with, right out of the gate. Palestri, I'm a big fan of his. Like Paul said, he comes on and he just changes games. He gives a bit of excitement. He's not afraid to go after players. He's not afraid to track back, and he's got a pretty good cross on him as well. I like the kid. I think he's very, very intelligent for someone that's so young. I mean, I'm sure at this point, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later on as well, but I would imagine Sancho now with the whole Anthony thing, Sancho's kicking himself because there was an ideal opportunity for him to come into the team, even though he'd be on the right. But Eriksen, for me, was fantastic last season. I really believe that. But I just don't think that he's a starting 11 at this moment in time, especially with the player we brought in with Amrabat. I'd go with Amrabat, Casemiro and Bruno. I think Eriksen's a great player to bring off the bench because when things are just not going right, and if we get into the 70th, 80th minute and it's still, you know, 0-0, 1-1, 2-2, whatever, a player like Eriksen is the player you want to be bringing onto that pitch because he just has the sweetest passes. He can unlock defences, and he's got a pretty good free kick on him. So, for me, Eriksen, I think, is a very, very good player to bring off the bench when we're in those tricky situations. But Hoyland is the guy that I'm really looking forward to. And I believe to get the best out of him, we have to go wide. I don't think narrow play is going to suit him. But I think the team that Paul had mentioned would be the one that I would start with too. We got to start with it. And I think Ten Hag will. I think he's going to want a reaction. You know, I know we'll talk about Arsenal as well, but, you know, the scoreline flattered Arsenal last week. I think, you know, it deserved a hell of a lot more out of that game than what we got. So I think Ten Hag has to go into this game front foot forward. Just go for it. You know, we like I said, we went 2-0 down against Forest. We came back to 3-2, which was a great resilience to come back. But I do believe we got to just go all out against Brighton. They're a very, very good side. Fingers crossed Ferguson doesn't play because he's on a high as well after that hat-trick against Newcastle. But I do believe that 6, the three in midfield, the three up top, is our best chance of winning this game. And it gives Hoyland the service that he needs. I really believe that. So.
Yeah. What do you think about, I mean, Garnacho then? Because he's probably got a much fairer chance of a much fairer shout of starting than Palestri. And I know, yeah, all right, it's not ideal playing Rashford from the right. In fact, not ideal is a massive overstatement, really, because you wouldn't want Rashford playing from the right at this moment. He's obviously much better from the left. Would you be tempted to go Garnacho from the right?
I wouldn't. I would prefer If Garnacho is going to... I'm sorry, did you say me or Paul? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you first. I'll cut Paul in a sec.
All right, sorry about that. Garnacho's biggest strength is the left. I think if Rashford hadn't scored that cracking goal last week, I would be pointing for Garnacho to be playing on the left. We have a dilemma with Garnacho right now. I personally believe he should be in the team. I think he should be playing out on the left, but that's at the sacrifice of a player that scored 20 goals last season. But for me, if we want to keep the progression of Garnacho in the direction that we believe he can go in, he has to start more games. And if that means sacrificing Marcus Rashford, I'm sorry, but I'm on that side of the fence. I think we have a potential world beater in Garnacho. He just gets better and better and better. I mean, the composure for that goal last week, the onside goal last week was phenomenal. We need to nurture that. And I don't think we're going to be able to nurture it by 10, 15-minute appearances from the bench.
Yeah. Paul, interesting thoughts from Dave. I know you were keen to speak there on Garnacho. So what are your thoughts on what you would do with him? But Dave's saying he would favour him over Rashford, but it's a big sort of... You know what I'm going to say when I say this, like it's a football, big political football problem if he drops Rashford, because Rashford was so good last season. You don't just drop a player who scored 30 goals. He's the poster boy of United, really. And you can't just drop him from the team. You've got to, you know, you're not going to drop Rashford ahead of all the other players. You know, I mean, then you would have a social media stint on your hands. And Rashford would have a point, to be fair. He's not played poorly enough to get dropped. But it reminds me a little bit, you're going to hear this comparison, but a little bit like yourself and Gary Neville. You weren't playing poorly. Gary Neville just came in and got his opportunity, you know what I mean? And then he took it and went, and you can't stop time. And Rashford's not old or injured, or he's not a veteran or he's injured, do you know what I mean? So he's got more of a room to grumble with that. But I mean, where do you stand on it? It is a conundrum, and it's not really, people would say it's a, managers love having these kind of problems, but I don't think that this is one that they will
like. Going to a bit about with Nev is that I look at it, and when I made my debut as a kid at 17, I made it on the back of someone else's misfortune of being injured. Not because maybe the manager at the time thought I was better. It was off the back of a player's misfortune. And generally, that's how it happens. It doesn't happen that often that a manager has got summer player ready and he makes that change for a younger one because he says, oh, he's better than you. You know, it's generally off a misfortune. But just going what Dave was saying, I would, at this moment in time, I would have Garnacho as an impact player. His best has always been as an impact player. And saw that bit, you know, it's just the way he is. At this moment, when he's at his games and he's started, he hasn't done well enough. And I look at the game against Wolves, Semedo, it was easy. Semedo had him, and it was easy for him. Semedo was causing massive problems on that right-hand side. His tracking back wasn't good. I don't think, and I've said this many times, I don't think Luke Shaw's a very good communicator. He had a young player in front of him, never talked to him. I think there was on too many occasions, Wolves broke into that gap. There was times against Arsenal last season. Luke Shaw was defending on the corner in the 6-yard box, and Garnacho was playing in front and up, you know, wasn't bringing him to say stop the ball going to Saka's feet. That's what you do. You know, none of us want to run, so you save yourself by saying to your wide player, I don't care if you don't come goal side, but don't let the ball go to my man's feet so he gets a run. Luke Shaw didn't do that, didn't help him. But I look at the other side is that when I look at it, I think the other lad I talked about, Pellistri, is cleverer. And I think he can do that. He will go and do that naturally. And that says a lot to me. And I think he's earned the right to get a few starts, as Garnacho did. He earned the right. I just don't think he's taking it on Wayne, to be honest. Yeah.
That's a fair point, actually. It's funny when you look at, and I'm definitely guilty of it in this comparison, where I'm saying Garnacho to start. The point is that I'm basing that off what he did off the bench against Arsenal, and you're quite right, his starting performances haven't been great. So, yeah, it's a fair call. Well, preview Brighton. I'll come to you first on this one, Paul. Dave, I know will grumble as soon as I say this. I think they're the best team to watch in the league. De Zerbe has done incredible things. De Zerbe as manager. They are still capable of a capitulation, though, as we've seen. You know, West Ham showed that, but they still had to do that economically. They had to do it, you know, winning the game and not having much of the ball. They are a team who do turn it on in big games. And I look at their progress since they've been in the Premier League, Paul, and it's just incredible. Like, I can't think of, you know, yeah, United under Ferguson have been managed perfectly, and Stoke under Tony Pulis were managed perfectly for a while, and so were you know, Arsenal under Wenger. They really progressed. But I look at Brighton now, I look at how they've been managed in terms of, they first came into the Premier League a few years ago, and I remember we had Mourinho as manager, and Chris Hughton would have been their manager, and they were so difficult to play against when they first came up. And then Potter took charge, and you're thinking, why did he get rid of Chris Hughton? You know, even then, it's like a strange one. But Graham Potter took them to another level. And then since they've changed manager again, they've gone up again. And you know, the capability to replace the players is incredible. It remains to be seen how that will transpire over the full season. But the early signs look good in the way that they're playing football so far. It's much the same as we could expect. So what are you expecting from when they come to Old Trafford on the weekend?
First of all, the Chris Hughton one was it did baffle a lot of people. But he kind of got caught up in it, and the ethos that was given to him was to keep Brighton in the Premier League. That's all it was. That's what he's got to do. The problem was that the owner at the time maybe didn't have the funds what he was looking for, and he found the funds, so it allowed him to change it to where it is now. But Chris could do that. Chris made them, they were negative. And as we know, there's a reason why creativity is so expensive, because it's difficult. Destroying is far easier than to create. And Chris could destroy, you know, that way. And most of us could set out to destroy a team, but you're asking a team to create on a regular basis, it's very, very difficult. Arsene Wenger added a bit of that when he arrived, a different way of managing a team, and it, you know, and the way they went. And we've seen the way Brighton have gone now. And so they changed it from Chris, and it was a shame, but you can see the way they stepped on. But it's the way the club completely changed their mindset and how they wanted to play, their ethos, whatever you want to call it. And that's why they got Graham Potter in, and he worked in. He was easy to work with, because all he had to do was manage a team in a fashion and play in a certain way, so they could go out and get the right players to play in that system. And Graham done that. Then De Zerbe's come in, and he's just showing that side of grit. And now, where before Brighton were a good football team, and if they go, and all of a sudden they'd have 25 shots to year five, but they still end up getting beat 1-0. And every time everyone go, we were so unlucky, this and that. De Zerbe's changed that now. They pass with a purpose now. You watch it. Every time they pass, there's an objective to go beyond. It's not square and backwards and all the, no, they go bang. And they are relentless, as you saw against Newcastle. I mean, you saw it against West Ham, but the difference is that was them of old, where they just wasn't getting the rubber to green. Don't remember as well, the keeper, Areola, was fantastic as well. Absolutely fantastic against West Ham. But they are, and I love watching Brighton. And when you see them,
picture the scene: all of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Play live, especially down at their ground, and you watch them live, and you're at that level that. Just above the pitch level, and you're watching that, and it's just incredible, their movement and the way they're passing, and they're virtually passing like that, just to give them more purpose to get forward. So where I might and other players might pass out there, they're virtually saying, we want it there so we can go that way. And that's around in their defending thirds, and that's what they do. And it's having a manager who's virtually saying, as long as you're making the right decision, I'll back you. I'll back you if you make it. It might be your execution. Brian McClair was the best at that. Brian McClair would try and do something. If it didn't come out, it didn't work out for him, he'll try and do it again because he believed it was right. It used to annoy the boss, though, but that's how chalky he was. And the boss was like that with Ryan Giggs. Ryan goes one against one. Ryan's got one against one. Ryan passes it. The boss goes crazy because you wanted Ryan Giggs one against one. When Ryan tried to beat three or four, the boss would go crazy because he wanted him to pass it then because he's dragged three players with him as players of that ilk did. Yeah. So Brighton as a team are, as we saw in the semi-final. It was the semi-final, wasn't it? It was the semi. Yeah, saw him in the semi-final. I keep forgetting I went to Wembley so many times in a short space of time, and you know that they totally, really, in a way, they it was incredible the way they shifted it about. But United gave a really good, solid performance, especially in that second half of the extra time, and they were the better team in that period of time, Manchester United. So for me, Brighton. Like you, Wayne, I love watching them play. I love what they go out and do. I enjoy watching them more than what I do Manchester City.
Yeah.
You know, because of where everyone's come from. And then when I saw the end of last season, the way they ripped apart City at their, you know, at their stadium, they ripped them apart. It's just it's fantastic for the way they've gone and done it. And that's why they're so, I think, respected by everybody in football, the way they've gone about it. Because it hasn't cost them fortunes, and they're making millions out of it. What a great way to be.
Yeah. Dan says, I think Brighton are one of those system teams, a bit like Ajax. It's a credit to them for building it. But when players leave, they tend not to fit other systems, which is a fair point. Dave, Brighton, you know, you're going to come and mock me for enjoying watching them play because they don't always win. I know you're a bit brutalist like that. What are you expecting? Because they've always done well at Old Trafford. They've had a really good record at Old Trafford.
Well, I think, to be fair, a lot of teams have had a really good record at Old Trafford in the past couple of years. I think your love for Brighton. I'm surprised you haven't started a new podcast with Brighton these days. So I'm just kidding. Listen, Brighton have done a phenomenal job. Anyone that watches and loves football can see that. But I think it's, it is a lot like when Leicester came up, you know, very well-run club, went on to win the league, you know, which was absolutely phenomenal. But I think there's also a time scale on when clubs like that go through that period and then come out the other side. I like Brighton. I think as a club, they're very well-run, they're very well-managed. But I don't buy into the fact that, and I think Dan has hit the nail on the head. They produce some very, very good players for their system. I haven't seen many of their players leave and become even better. So there's also that. I'm a little bit, I don't know. I think I would have been a lot more nervous playing Brighton if we didn't have the opportunity to bring in two or three new players on to make their debuts this weekend. I think, as Paul said earlier on, that's going to lift the crowd. It's going to lift the team. It's going to lift the club. And I think that's what we need because every day is bad news day at the moment at Manchester United. So Brighton coming to Old Trafford, anyone coming to Old Trafford, I mean, Paul has witnessed to this many, many times. They lift their game. You know, they completely lift their game coming to Old Trafford. It's a massive point or 3 points for them if they can get it. So I don't expect anything less than a very, very competitive game against Brighton this weekend. But that said, I think with the new signings, if Ten Hag brings them in, I do expect us to win on Saturday. But that's not taking anything away from Brighton. You know, I'm not as vested in them as a lot of people there, especially on this podcast, are. but I think they are a fantastically run club. But Dan, I go back to Dan's point. It is a very valid point. They have some very, very good players and a very good system at Brighton. But the proof is when they leave. And Ajax are the same. I mean, I know we could point to, you know, maybe a handful of players that have left Ajax and done really, really well down the years. But a lot of the players, more so when they leave Ajax, they don't really take it up a level or two. And we've had a few of them ourselves. You know, David Blaine, we've had Van der Beek, I mean, people like that. But yeah, they are a very, very good run club. I'll give it that. But I do find that at times they do tend to implode. And when you look at the West Ham game at home, that was one of them. So I'm hoping that they bring that to Old Trafford this weekend. So.
Yeah. Wishful thinking. You'll get a good Brighton performance, I'm sure. I'm sure because I'm such a big fan. All right.
You're onto a winner this week. You can't lose. You know, your first favorite team and your second favorite team are going to play each other. So,
look, there's nothing wrong with being fond of as a footballer of another team. Who like you know, like Paul said, they're better to watch than stare. They play football in the right way. Like the way that they play in defense, I think is the thing that really they're so proactive with that. Before we move on to Bayern, we do have a comment for Paul. I'll get on to in a second. Patrick says, great to see you all after what's been a long few weeks of bumpy starts off the pitch stuff and anti-United guff. Yep, absolutely. Definitely hoping for more positive stuff on that regard. Let's get back to football. Ten Hag can make a difference where it really matters. Dan says, win Brighton. which... Is as bad as one of my jokes, to be
love
fair.
Love it.
Stuart asks Paul, quick question for you, Paul, before we move on to the Bayern preview. Did you ever change your position in games due to your interpretation of how the match was going as opposed to what the gaffer wanted? I guess with Ferguson, it'd be a big fat no, but maybe the managers. Did you ever do that?
I mean, I'll go with what you said. Not a chance. You did it. I knew exactly where I should be. I didn't have to do much more because there was a very good front six in front of me. So I did what I thought I did best was just to defend. It's as simple as that in that way. I would never, wouldn't have just kind of take it upon myself to go into there because I felt that I could have made a difference in there. And I think the other lads around me would have told me exactly the same as well. And everyone, you get your key players who can go and do that. But, there was a job. And I think that was no difference to the back four I played in. We was all very much, that was our jobs. The rest of them in front of us, they're the ones who are going to make things happen.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that we're making things happen in the Champions League, Paul. The first game is going to be Bayern Munich away with Harry Kane. Harry Kane started life there very well. Bayern, one of the most intimidating prospects outside of English football, at least. English football, you would expect to dominate the Champions League again, but Bayern are one of the teams who can certainly upset the apple cart there. And with Kane, definitely look at the real deal. They always look like the real deal anyway, but certainly with Kane, they look at a different proposition. The worst game in the group. Is it better to start like that, or is it better to get points on the board? I mean, if United come away with a draw from this one, Paul, they're going to think they've done very well. I mean, would you prefer to start in this fashion, or would you prefer to have like points on the board and go there later in the group?
I think you might be better just grabbing them early before it gets going. In certain ways, depends. I think everyone's going to have their own opinion about it, but we must say though is that the one thing now, look at German football. Is that United are going to score goals. The Germans, as club and country, don't defend well at all. I mean, they had Lewandowski for ages. He was scoring loads of goals for them, but they were conceding so many. They've still got this idea, and they follow their idea is what they take as club level. It's mirrored by international. The club level mirrors what they do internationally, and it's to play high lines. And it's high lines. When you look at Werner, Chelsea signed Werner. My boy turned around and said to me, Werner will be useless at Chelsea. I went, don't be silly. Look at the goals he's scoring. And he goes, because all his goals, he's having six chances a game. He's just running through one-on-ones all the time. And we saw that when he came to Chelsea, one against one, he was poor. He had a bad time. Could have been the curse of the number nine at Chelsea, but still, he struggled. So I think German football is nowhere near what it is. And when you see the Germans the other day getting beaten at home so easily by Japan, the goals they conceded were disgusting. So it's when we talk about Manchester United, Bayern Munich, we have to live in that world of what it was, during Sir Alex's time. Not now. The German, as clubs and as country, they need again to go back into the classroom and start again. So this is to play them now for me is as good a time as any. And the only thing you can talk about is that they've got Harry Kane. that's all you talk about, really, just to add a little bit to it. But you, I don't think you can build this game as it would have done many moons ago about Manchester United v Bayern Munich. That's me. That's just my humble opinion about it. And, you know, this is the best side in Germany. It's proven by every time. They won the league, luckily, last season, really. Just, you know, very fortunate in the way Dortmund finished. Dortmund just had a blip on the final day. They were going great guns. It just had a massive blip. Maybe it got to a few of the players. So they've tried to guarantee that they can win the league by getting themselves another out-and-out goal scorer, is what they had in Lewandowski, and hope it worked that way. But for me, where before, you know, worry about United's form, against Bayern Munich, I wouldn't be that worried. As well, it could be. There's more worrying games in the Premier League than what there is playing Bayern Munich.
Yeah, interesting. I do. If I have a concern over that, I think that United sometimes do play names and not forms. You know, they will tend to like be overawed by what they come up against some of United's players. But you know, hopefully. Your prediction is right. I do remember like the 5-1 against England like 22 years ago caused a massive reset in German football, and yeah, the Japanese defeat is similarly catastrophic. David, it's a funny one with Bayern, because United obviously got this long history with Munich, and we didn't play Bayern until the 98-99 season when we played them three times. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and that's like 4 years after the 3 years after the disaster. 30 years, sorry. 48, my maths is way off. 41 years after the disaster. Yeah, all right. Yeah, obviously not my strong point this morning. Numbers are hard, kids. Numbers are hard. What can I say? So, I mean, but yeah, Paul's quite right. You know, Bayern have got this tradition, and we've been through, obviously, the first... We play them like two or three times in a few seasons, and then, you know, they had their reputation and we had our reputation, and we played them in David Moyes' season, and we were a different kind of reputation. The Van Gaal game as well, where we were battering them 3-0, and then Rafa got sent off, and they came back to lose but qualify through away goals. And then obviously there was the one where Evra scored the screamer, and then they went on to eliminate us. The best sort of 60 seconds of David Moyes' era, gone in a flash. But it's a different Bayern team. It's definitely a very different United team. I do think United do tend to go some places and play the reputation and the name rather than, as Paul's saying, the form book, because it's, yeah, perhaps nothing to be feared on that regard. And, you know, United should go there and have strengths that will exploit their weaknesses. What are you expecting to see next week?
I mean, I think Paul hit on it there earlier on. There's two different types of Bayern Munich that can show up. One that can concede an absolute boatload of goals, and then there's the other one where, you know, they just dig in and get a result. I think getting them first is probably away from home is probably the best start we can hope for. Because we get them at both ends. We get them at, you know, away the game one and at home in game six. And hopefully by game six, we're already through. We've got that, you know, that famous 9 points that Berg used to say you need in the group stage to get out. I think it's probably a tough start, but it's probably best having that right at the very beginning. Bayern are certainly not the team that they were 4, 5, 6 years ago. But with Harry Kane, you know, he's one of the top strikers in the world. I'm still disappointed we didn't make an effort to buy him. Maybe we did, but, you know, he's obviously playing for Bayern now. And I you know, the only thing that concerns me a little bit is that, you know, albatross hanging around our neck, and that's our away form. Our away form is absolutely shocking under Ten Hag. So going to Bayern, I mean, it's very early in the season as well. That said, they've won their first three games. But, you know, winning your first three games in Germany is like winning your first 15 as Celtic in Scotland. You know, there's no real level there. Let's be honest, you know, Dortmund should have won the league last year. They didn't. Bayern are just, you know, you're in a league where you're, you know, 80 to 90% chance of winning it. So they're definitely not the team of old. They're even definitely not the team of a couple of years back. Lewandowski, and I think Kane will cover over a lot of the cracks that they have. It'll be an interesting game. And if we come away with a point, I'll be very happy with that, because then our follow-up games are two home games, which we should expect to get 6 points out of them as well. So I think the draw was favorable to us in the fixtures, that we get them at both ends, because by the time we meet them again at Old Trafford, hopefully we're already through. So, but Bayern will be a tough game. We all know that. I think our away form is more concerning to me than actually the team we're playing. But it'll be a very interesting time. It is going to be a difficult game. It really is.
Yeah. Well, thankfully for Dave, we can revisit his confidence this time next week, because obviously I've got full steam ahead previewing a game that still won't have taken place by the time we do next Monday's podcast. But we will be back to talk next week about the Brighton game. Numbers, obviously, like I said, not my strong point, and obviously fixture scheduling, but it's good to talk anyway. I just wanted to keep the guys for a little bit longer, because if we were only talking about the Brighton game, then it would have been a quite short podcast. Patrick says in the comments.
Wayne, I do have a question for Paul, if you don't mind. Paul, with everything that's going on at the club right now, everything that's happened last year with Ronaldo, and now obviously every time you open up social media, there's something new about Manchester United that they have to deal with. Erik ten Hag is obviously improved us a hell of a lot over the past season or so. If this continues and the sale of the club doesn't go through and we get to January and there's still restrictions on the managers, you pointed out earlier on, do you think there's a risk of ten Hag walking away?
If all that was to happen, I think in a way, I wouldn't be shocked if he'd done it. I'd be disappointed if he didn't do it, because he's still got a reputation to protect. Yeah. Nothing's been given to him. Why should he have his career soured by Manchester United? Because it has soured a few managers who have managed them, because they haven't been allowed to do what they do. It's all well and good sacking somebody when you don't get results, but when you haven't given that person the best tools to work with, and you expect them to get on with it, and then you make decisions on when you can and can't not buy players, and then you turn around and say, well, you can't have him, but you can have him, then there's a big, big problem. So if things weren't to improve, I wouldn't be shocked if he walked away from it. I think it would be quite clever if he walked away, and I think he'd be respected for that, because it opens up the door again to people to ask what's going on when a manager of his magnitude walks away from the biggest club in the world. And that's not good again for Manchester United on the PR side of things, when Manchester United, where we talked about them being the best in football, that's what helped them get to where they were. From that moment we won that first Premier League title back in 93, that's where it started from. When Danny McGregor came onto that pitch and was handing us out T-shirts, we're looking, what are they? That was called forward thinking, to put those T-shirts on. After that final whistle, no other team had done that before, and it was built on from there. So that's the bit they've got to be concerned about, because you don't stay at the top if you're not working hard. And when you're working hard, I mean working hard on the football pitch. So the pitch is the most important place where you sell yourself first and foremost. And as good as Manchester United are on the PR side, and how highly respected and how top of the tree they are in support and of selling shirts, that falls away if you're not bringing things through the door, which are called trophies.
Well, we got one last season, hoping for more this season, and some more maybe than the one we got, obviously, as well. Good point made there by Paul. To close on, Patrick says, I know they appreciate why Sir Alex was such a fierce protector of the club. So many pundits, experts and celebrities want to take pot shots at the club, sometimes unjustifiably. Seed mentality returns. Yeah, I mean, you can't say that, you know, obviously some of the criticism that's been levelled at the individuals over the last 6 weeks, you know, you can't complain about that, because some of the actions of those individuals deserve that criticism. But yeah, it does definitely feel like it's open season, and everyone, I mean, nobody needs an excuse to have a pop at United, but when you give them it, they're going to go full tilt, and they have done. It's our job as fans to sort of weather that storm and step up for the club and defend the club when wherever we can. And obviously within the club, you want to see a reaction, because this is where you'll see a test of character from the players. And hopefully Ten Hag's tuned into that difficult, very difficult question to ask. And it's not a criticism against him if he can't manage it, because it's very difficult profile. But if he can manage that and manifest into something good, like Fergie was always used to doing, then you know you've got the signs of something good. And hopefully we'll see something like that against Brighton at the weekend. Because it would be very welcome indeed if we do. We'll be back next week to talk about that game, guys. If you've watched live on YouTube or Facebook, really, really appreciate your support. If you're watching the replay, comment, because we do reply to the comments. And if you're listening back on the audio podcast, if you can subscribe if you haven't already and leave a review on the platform you're listening on, those reviews really do mean a lot to us. So please do that. We will be back next week, guys. So stay safe, stay well. Thanks for listening and watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.